Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. Please make a donation online at loe.org or call me at 617-629-3638. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Jeff Young.
And I'm Steve Kerwood. The Bushmen of the Kalahari in Africa have lived for tens of thousands of years, finding water and scratching out an existence in the harsh desert landscape.
It's very drab. It's very monotonous. It's the closest I can imagine to a moonscape.
That's James Workman, an international water specialist from California who traveled in the Kalahari. His new book is called Heart of Dryness, How the Last Bushman Can Help Us Endure the Coming Age of Permanent Drought. Mr. Workman says we should pay heed to the Bushmen because inevitable climate change will lead to growing global desertification, including dry areas like America's Southwest. But James Workman says that the Bushmen nearly lost the skills they developed to survive in their hostile land when the Botswana government implemented a series of forced resettlements.
They moved them out to these reserves and rakops, and it wasn't that there was less water. It was the monopoly water. It was the government saying, here's a pipe, and you get all the water you want. On the surface, like, oh, who can complain about that? But it changed their life because there was then nothing for them to organize their existence around. Before, they'd been hunting and gathering and trading and exchanging and doing so on their own terms and timetable. And then you hook them up to a tap, and that was it. In some cases, that water wasn't as good a quality. When you concentrate people and animals around water, you create all kinds of unintended negative effects of sewage in the water supply, of malaria because you've got standing water.
And of course, once you have people dependent on a pipe for water, things happen when you shut off that pipe, and that's indeed what the government did. What happened to the Bushmen who chose to stay despite the lack of water?
They fell back on the old ways, as they call them. So the elders became, in many ways, leaders of saying, okay, here's how we're going to cope. We know the secret places where water is hidden. We know when to capture it. We know how to use it. When I first approached them, I thought I was coming to rescue the Bushmen, and it turned out quite the opposite, especially after my vehicle broke down in the middle of the Kalahari, where I realized I have nothing to offer these guys. They've been here. They know what to do. On the other hand, if I can ever get out of here, which eventually I did with some help, I'm going to see what they can do to help us.
The Bushmen can survive in surprisingly arid conditions. What lifestyle choices make that possible, and what might we learn from them as a society?
You can't increase supply, so what you have to do is somehow find ways to reduce demand, and they're masters at that. They sequester water. They scoop it off as soon as there's a rainfall into a pan or into a tree, and then they store it in a jug, a canister, an oil drum, ostrich shells to prevent evaporation, whereas we do the exact opposite. You know, we store these water in giant dams which evaporate rapidly, and they also drink and eat local. They don't lose things through leaks and pollution and spilling over long distance, whereas we ship water from the Colorado River or from two states away. And then they reuse water as often as possible. They saw me sort of like wanting to throw out some dishwater, and they're just like, what are you thinking?
In your view, what's the craziest thing that people here in the affluent West do with water?
We grow rice in the desert. We store water in these 5-foot-deep reservoirs. And the hardest thing for us on a personal level to recognize is the idiocy of flush toilets. And that uses not just a lot of water that could otherwise be used and saved for the environment. It pollutes it, it spreads disease, and it requires a huge amount of energy. Here in California, a fifth of the energy in the state goes towards treating and lifting and moving and warming water.
Now, somebody listening to us would say, okay, fine. You want us to live like the Bushmen of the Kalahari. How do you deal with this in a modern urban society?
Well, what we can do is adopt their approach to water and give it the kind of value that they do. There are incentives and there's technology already available. Germany and Norway, it's almost become a fad to have what they call eco-sand, these composting toilets, which then turn our human waste into an asset. There are ways to minimize the impact that we leave, and that's the lesson from the Bushmen.
It would be helpful if you could describe the Bushmen's practices of trading water and ownership.
The main thing is that there's no monopoly on water. I sort of came there thinking, oh, you know, the Bushmen are primitive Marxists, because that was sort of a romantic idea I had. And it's quite the opposite. They recognize the strength of each other, of who can gather, who can hunt, who has rights to this sip well, to that pan, to this, you know, foraging ground. They know and keep track of mentally who owes whom what. And that matters in times of scarcity, because it relieves the pressure of saying, okay, you're not pulling your weight, or you're wasting something. So it's self-regulating in a way that we couldn't begin to recognize without no police force, no politicians saying, okay, you get this much water, I'm deciding, you know, where this water goes and so forth. And so they own shares, and by doing so, they take good care of it. They make it last as long as possible. We don't. The water in our toilet, in our sink, in our shower, in our gardens, we rent that, and we borrow it. It's subsidized in the same way it's subsidized to farmers. And if you have something that you're renting, you just don't take as good care of it, and you have no incentive to make it last, and you have no incentive to trade it with your neighbors.
So how feasible is it to apply the Bushmen survival skills to developed countries?
Well, we have technology that they don't. And our greatest technology in the last few years developed is the web, of course. What you have with eBay, what you have with Amazon, is this ability to trade with strangers and build trust. And that's the kind of thing I think we can adopt, and which I'm trying to pioneer, where you and somebody across the city from you, you're all in the same water supply. You use, you know, 50 gallons. He uses 500 gallons. And if everybody gets the same amount of water, you can sell what you don't use, or you can save it, to that stranger. It's like an eBay for the environment.
One aspect of the case of the Bushmen that came up was the question of whether water is a basic human right.
Yeah.
Now, it seems to me that it's impossible to live without water. So what is the argument to say that water is not a human right?
I'm siding with you exactly on that. But the counterpoint is like, well, wait, if water is a human right, then if some government fails to provide it through incompetence, do they get hauled up in front of The Hague? Are they human rights violators, whether it's intentional or unintentional? And if it's a human right, does that mean I get unlimited water wherever I live, if so I can move to the Mojave Desert and say, I've got a human right to water, you must bring that water to me? My answer is that it is a human right, but it need not be called that. You can quantify a certain amount for every single person, rich or poor, and if they use that amount, then it's free. If they use less than that amount, which they own, then they can sell or save credits that they've earned. Water is an economic good, and it's a human right, and it's both together, and we can use it as such.
James Workman's new book is called Heart of Dryness, How the Last Bushman Can Help Us Endure the Coming Age of Permanent Drought. Thank you so much, Jamie.
Steve, thanks very much.